you're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
For Matthew Perreault, ahead for Nikolai Ehlers. Three shots on goal in that first period for Ehlers. Scheifele scores! Mark Scheifele, wow! And for the second straight night, he gets the Jets' first goal of the game on a wicked wrist shot.
Mark Scheifele scored the game last season. Winnipeg Jets fans can count on him doing that for the next eight seasons, as he has agreed to a long-term contract with the hometown Winnipeg Jets. It's a $49 million contract, $6.125 million per season. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, an exquisite, a beautiful Saturday morning here in Winnipeg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside Ezra Ginsberg, producer Rory working his magic behind the board, getting us on and off the air. Ezzy, good morning to you, first of all, first and foremost. We start, of course, with the news out of Winnipeg Jets camp. Busy week for Winnipeg Jets, for the Winnipeg Jets organization. We had the multiple signings to contract extensions. We had development camp in town. A very busy week for the Winnipeg Jets, but we start with the big name, with the former first pick of Winnipeg Jets 2.0. You were there in Minneapolis and St. Paul, pardon me, when the Jets made Mark Scheifele the first pick of the organization, and he has now agreed to that eight-year contract extension. He was set to be, or he was a restricted free agent. He inks up for eight more seasons. Your thoughts? $6.125 million per season is the salary cap hit. Takes him through his 31st birthday. That's when the contract expires. This will be his large NHL contract. Whatever he's going to get after this contract expires won't be as big as $49 million. Your thoughts on 8 years, $49 million for Winnipeg Jets center Mark Scheifele?
Yeah, good morning, Drew. It's a lot of money for Mark Scheifele, 8 years, $49 million, as you just mentioned. We were expecting the contract to be either 6, 7, or 8 years, and obviously the Jets decided to give him the max eight-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing not to like about the contract, in my opinion, especially considering, as we know, Mark Scheifele coming off of the career year, 61 points in 71 games. Drew, he probably would have hit 35 goals if he played a full season. You could maybe even argue, because he had a bit of a slow stretch kind of at the midway point of the season, you could maybe even argue that Scheifele would have hit 40 goals there. Needless to say, Mark Scheifele developed and emerged into a number one center this past year. And whether or not Brian Little ends up playing significant amount of time on the power play and gets first line duties, needless to say, Mark Scheifele is the best center that the Jets have right now. And because of that, I'm not surprised that he was given the full 8 years. And we were expecting it. You wrote an article for illegalcurve.com. We mm-hmm. talked about it, I think it was 3 weeks ago on the show. And it was somewhere around $6 million to $6.5 million for the 7, 8 year contract. I believe it was 6.2, 6.3, whatever. You were very close.
It was 6.5 is what I predicted for IC in that article.
Right.
I said that if they had gone for the full 8 years, I thought it would have been a cap hit of $6.5 million.
Right. So you're 300 plus thousand off.
I'm in the ballpark. Right. I thought that, I was a little bit surprised actually when the number came out yesterday that it was just over that $6.1 million mark. I thought that, if you're going to lock up really the entire prime of your career, because when you're 31 in this day and age in the NHL, you're definitely, if you've probably plateaued, if not already on the downside of your career age-wise after, 11 years in the league, which that will be for Mark Scheifele. I thought he would want a little bit more money in terms of the salary cap hit, but I guess really you're splitting hairs when you're up in the $49 million mark.
Yeah, you're talking about a few hundred thousand dollars. We're not actuaries, so we're not going to spend too much time you know, on that exact cap hit. It was around, when you think about, Drew, what Mark Scheifele is worth, and we saw Nathan McKinnon sign yesterday for just over $6 million a year. So you're talking about Mark Scheifele making the same amount of money as the 2013 first overall draft pick.
Right.
In Nathan McKinnon. So Mark Scheifele is going to be in the World Cup. I think as the years progress, he's going to be, if the NHL does decide to participate in the Olympics, he'll be in the conversation for the Olympic team. And we've seen how he played with Nikolaj Ehlers and Blake Wheeler this year on the top line. I mean, he has developed into a number one center, as we just said. Now, is he a perfect player? Absolutely not. He needs to be better on faceoffs. I think he has a lot of room to grow on the defensive side of the puck, and I think he would say that himself. In fact, he has said that himself. But when you talk about how he has progressed from being drafted in 2011, going back to the Barrie Colts for a couple more years, then coming into Winnipeg three seasons ago, and he had his growing pains, all of the Scheifele down. He was having a lot of problems with his strength and his skating, but this guy has worked really hard to get better with Gary Roberts in the offseason. He's continued to get better and better, and now he's been rewarded. So, well, and I'm not saying that you could maybe, you know, if from the a counter standpoint, you could say, well, you know, maybe they should have only given him 5 or 6 years, but I think they know exactly what they have in Mark Scheifele, and that's why they were confident to give him the 8 years.
You know, that obviously people are going to criticize, or they're going to find some faults. This contract seems very fair. It seems fair for both sides. Mark Scheifele is getting $49 million over the next 8 years, so that's very fair. The Jets, you know, the salary cap hit a little over $6 million. I think that's quite fair from the Jets' perspective. It seems like it's a deal all around where both sides can say, yes, I feel confident about this. You know, Mark Scheifele, look, he might even outplay this contract if he continues to put up numbers like he did towards the end of last year. So you mentioned Brian Little. So when Brian Little went down on February 18th, Mark Scheifele, that's when his role really increased and when he became he was the Jets' number one center, certainly from then on last season. His ice time increased from 17 minutes per game to 20 minutes per game. He scored 17 goals and had 34 points in 26 games when Brian Little was out of the lineup and when he was really playing long-term with Ehlers and with Wheeler. Well, if Mark Scheifele is, you know, over a point per game player, as he was for really the last 40 or so games of the year last year, a $6 million contract is going to look like a bargain, because guys who get over a point a game in the NHL, they get paid $7.5 million a year. They get paid $8 million a year. If his performance continues as it has, if growth continues year over year over year, as it has for the first 3 years in the NHL, this could be a contract that people say, this is a good value for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, and sure, Drew, I agree with everything you said, but there are now higher expectations for Mark Scheifele. He now makes the upper echelon salary in the NHL. So
he makes the most money on the team.
Right, he makes the most money on the team now, and he's now making, as we talked about, the same type of money as guys like Nathan McKinnon and Matt Duchene and the top-tier forwards in the NHL. And not to
most
say
most money among forwards, I should have said. Instead, not on the team. Obviously, Buff makes more than him, but most money among the forwards.
Right, but needless to say, he is now the second highest paid guy on the Jets. Mm-hmm. And again, he deserves it. I mean, this is a guy who was drafted higher than he was supposed to go. He was a guy that didn't come into the NHL as an 18-year-old like Nathan McKinnon. He was a guy that went back to Barrie, worked hard, did what his coach told him to do, Dale Hawerchuk, got better, got stronger. And he has progressed. Each year he's got more points. His points per game has gone up every year. I think he hasn't reached the ceiling. I think he can still get 80 or 85 points in the NHL, especially when you're playing with guys like Blake Wheeler, Nikolaj Ehlers. Nikolaj Ehlers was a rookie last year, and Scheifele and Ehlers had great chemistry together. But back to those expectations, though. I mean, now you're expected every night to get either a goal or assist or have an impact on the game, similar to Blake Wheeler.
Sure.
We talked about that a lot last year, Drew. Blake Wheeler rarely has a bad game, if ever. And the best players in the NHL, those guys, you know, night in and night out, those guys are going to be good. Sidney Crosby, right?
Yeah.
Alexander Ovechkin.
Patrick Kane. There's no off night. For the superstars and the guys who are getting paid you know, as the, you know, the best, as their best players on the team, or the guys who are considered the best players on their team, there are no off nights, and you cannot have an off night, even if you're not feeling it.
Right.
And we, you know, every NHL player goes through games, goes through lulls where the, you know, it's a long 82 game season, and you just, your legs don't have it as much as some other nights. You can't use it as an excuse. Not that they ever do, but you're expected to contribute, even if it's not necessarily offensively. You're expected to be good in the face-off dot, or you're expected to be good in the defensive zone. There are no excuses. You cannot take an off night. And, you know, Mark Scheifele now has the responsibility that comes with a $6 million plus contract per season.
And Drew, he's now also expected to be more of a leader.
Sure.
He already became a leader this past season. And Blake Wheeler and Brian Little are the veteran forwards of this group. But after that, and maybe after throwing a Chris Thorburn, but I'm talking about the core forwards. When you're talking about Nikolaj Ehlers, Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, Andrew Kopp, Adam Lowry, this is a very young group. And now that Scheifele has been given an 8-year contract, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be named captain, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was named assistant captain.
That would be my expectation. I know he's the, you know, he's the quote unquote the face of the franchise or whatever you want. He's made the long-term commitment. I think Blake Wheeler is going to be the next captain. I think Blake Wheeler deserves to be the next captain because I think he has been sort of the, he is the pulse of the team now that Andrew Ladd left. I think Scheifele will definitely be an assistant captain. I think he'll be, to some degree, at the age of 23, I think he will be a mentor for Ehlers and for Laine and, you know, obviously Andrew Kopp, who doesn't have the same offensive upside. But, he, you know, these guys need to look to Scheifele and the way he prepares in the offseason and the way he dedicates himself to the game and the way he is, you know, he calls himself, quote-unquote, I think he called himself a hockey nerd or something in the conference call yesterday. Yeah, you know, he's a self-described hockey nerd because he watched the Jets intra-squad game. This is a guy who lives and breathes hockey.
He really does, Drew. And, you know, it's less of a hockey nerd to me and more, you know, the, remember the old term rink rat.
Sure.
Mark Scheifele at the World Hockey Championships, alongside Max Domi and some other guys, he was one of those guys that stayed on the ice late after practice. And he does that in Winnipeg, too. This guy lives and breathes hockey. And that's why you should be completely confident if you're a Jets fan in knowing that they have signed the right guy. I mean, I have heard very little negative criticism of this contract. I mean, when you talk about how Mark Scheifele played, you mentioned it, Drew. The last 20, 30 games of the season, Scheifele, Wheeler, and Ehlers were pretty much the hottest line in the NHL, with the exception of maybe a line or two here.
Sure.
And this was for a team that wasn't going anywhere.
Right.
So it shows you a lot. And sure, he was motivated. He had a contract coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But this is also a guy that I think wasn't happy that he missed 10 games earlier in the season.
Yeah.
So good for Scheifele. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't have anything to prove now, because now he's got the big contract. He's going to have the A on his sweater. Now he has to prove that he can do it year after year.
He played those last 40 games, or, you know, however many games exactly was, in and around 40, where he was over a point per game player. Well, now the problem is, as you said from the outset there, Ezzy, as you pour coffee down your face, well done there, is that the...
Tim Hortons lids, I got to tell you. These Tim Hortons lids, I don't know if it's my small mouth.
I
don't know what it is.
Hang on, you're blaming the lid and not the user error in this instance?
Well, Drew, I drink Tim Hortons coffee every day, and they don't leak like this.
Well, then I mean, so you think it's this one lid that's faulty?
That's a faulty lid.
Okay. Anyways, going back to what I was saying, the expectations, you mentioned it right off the outset, the expectations for Mark Scheifele are now, hey, you know, kid, quote unquote, 23 years old, sort of a kid, but not a kid really in the NHL terms anymore, but hey, kid, you had a point per game over the last 40 games of the year. We expect a point per game, maybe not over 82 games, but we expect just under there. There's no dipping back down to the 50-point mark anymore. You finish the year with 61 points. We expect you to be up towards 70 points next season and going forward.
Well, Drew, that's just the point, right? Like, last year, Mark Scheifele was still developing,
mm-hmm.
right? If anything, he was the one player on the Jets that exceeded our expectations. Jacob Trouba certainly didn't.
No.
And maybe Blake Wheeler.
Blake Wheeler matched, you know, Blake Wheeler for the last two seasons has been a top 10 NHL right winger, and last season he was a top 5 NHL right winger.
He's been the Jets' best player.
Yes.
But needless to say,
I still think he is, for the record.
The Jets, for the most part, were a big disappointment, and Scheifele was one of the only bright stars of the team last year. Not to say that there weren't other players. Ehlers had a good rookie year. But other players certainly were disappointing and took a step back. Now, the point back to what we were talking about before is Now he is done his development stage. Now Mark Scheifele is a part of this older core. Yeah. Because when you talk about the Jets, their average age next year is going to be, what, 24 and a half, 25 well, years old?
It's going to be young. When you bring in Line A, who's 18, you bring in Connor, who's either 19 or 20, and right. Andrew Kopp is still young. I mean, if he's on the team, lots of young talent on the Jets.
Like you said, he's going to be expected now to be more of a leader. Mm-hmm. Not that he wasn't a leader, but now that he's got that 8-year contract, it comes with those expectations. And I think, by the way, that he's going to have no problem meeting those expectations. I think Scheifele's a special player, and I think that he is a perfect guy for the Jets to sign to an 8-year contract. So I think we're expecting it to happen. It happened maybe a little bit earlier than in the offseason than we thought it was going to happen. But certainly, I have no problems with it.
I think that it's a reasonable number, and now Mark Scheifele has to match the expectations that come with it, and that we will obviously have to see as the season unfolds. Let's head to break. When we come back, Jets made another significant contract signing. Matthew Perreault is our next topic of conversation. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Off the backboard, center, score! Zach Bogosian puts it onto the tape for Matthew Perreault. Perreault's 12th of the year. Cross ice, Perreault waits, scores! Matthew Perreault continues to sizzle. Shankly to the line for Edstrom, score! Matthew Perreault may have a hat trick.
The hats are going to rain down now.
Michael Foley and Al Montoya, the save, rebound, score!
A seminal moment in the Winnipeg Jets 2.0. Matthew Perreault's 4-goal game back on January 13th, 2015 versus the Florida Panthers.
You know, I love producer Rory finding those clips.
Yeah.
There was a little Zach Bogosian reference there. Old school Jets.
Exactly. That's pre-Kane and Bogosian trade, obviously. Matthew Perreault with those 4 goals against the Panthers. He signs a 4-year contract extension to be with the Winnipeg Jets for the next 4 years, plus one more year, as the contract doesn't kick in until after the 2016-17 season. He's still under contract. So this contract will take him through 2020-2021. It's 4 years. It's $16.5 million. It's a salary cap hit of $4.125 million.
Drew, before we get into this here,
please.
You know, going back to January 13th, 2015, to me that was one of the most exciting games to ever occur at the MTS Center, even though the Jets absolutely pummeled the Florida Panthers.
They did. He got close to the fifth goal. If you remember, he had that breakaway in the third period where, had he scored that fifth goal, I believe somebody would have won $1 million, if I recall correctly. I think that's what the promotion was.
What was her name again?
I can't remember what her name was, Ezzy. That's 2 years ago. You think I can remember that?
Yeah, you barely remember what you had for breakfast.
I have no clue anymore.
You had porridge.
When you have a baby at home, it's just a blur over and over again. Yeah. It was what happens at that point in time.
Yeah, well, you've got liquids flying everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah. It's just, you know, the dog doesn't even want to eat the baby food anymore. It's really upsetting.
If you remember correctly, though, Drew, it was just shortly before that Brian Little had the hat trick for the first ever Jets 2.0 hat trick. I think it was a couple of months earlier. I'm not mistaken. It was at the beginning of the 2015-2016 season.
Here's our fan.
Pardon me, 2014-15 season.
Our fan. You know how good our fans are on Twitter? This is Chucky D1Can reminds us that the fan's name was Gale. That it was Gail who was in line to win the $1 million. And
I didn't get that tweet.
Nobody wants to tweet at you. They want to tweet at Illegal Curve.
Chucky's got
to
follow me.
Well, anyways, thank you, Chucky, for letting us know that Gail was the name of the fan that Matthew Perreault just missed out on winning $1 million.
And then remember, they had her on the station after because she wasn't at home.
Yes.
And then someone told her that she was in this contest, and then she went home and started watching the game.
Let's talk about the contract. It's 4 years.
I want to talk more about Gail.
It's 4 years. It's $16.5 million, $4.125 million per season. you know, your thoughts on this contract for Matthew Perreault, obviously a long-term member of the Winnipeg Jets. You know, Paul Maurice said that, you know, Perreault has found his home, his NHL home in Winnipeg, since he came over from the Anaheim Ducks after spending that one season in Anaheim and then coming over to the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, I like the contract. I think that we were also expecting this contract to get done, possibly after Mark Scheifele or Jacob Trouba, but it happened basically at the same time. Matthew Perreault has added a dynamic element to the Jets forward group, and it's unfortunate that he's had a few injury problems over the last couple of years, Drew, but yeah. When you go back to that offseason and Kevin Cheveldayoff signing Matthew Perreault to a three-year, $9 million contract, I mean, this is one of the best...
Two off-seasons ago.
This is one of the best value contracts in the NHL. I mean, Matthew Perreault is a guy who can consistently get you 40 to 50 points. He's a guy that can play on the power play. He's a guy that moves the puck well. He makes other players around him better, and that's the sign of a really good player. This is a guy that put up back-to-back 100-plus point seasons in the QMJHL. This was a very good player when he played for the Capitals and Ducks, so not at all surprised that the Jets have locked him up here for four more years. Going back to what we said during the first segment, Drew, I mean, when you have this young group of forwards, Laine and Connor are coming into the NHL this year, mm-hmm. and when you have other young forwards already in the lineup, Ehlers, you think Ehlers is a veteran, he's still a kid, and you've got other guys like Kopp, and we've talked about those guys on the bottom six. It's important to have a guy like Matthew Perreault, and it's also important, Drew, to have a guy that can play center and wing.
Sure.
And the Jets have no shortage of guys that can play center or wing. Alexander Burmistrov, Adam Lowry, Sean Mathias, who they just signed, he can play center and wing. So a guy like Matthew Perreault is very valuable. And when you think about how much money they're giving Matthew Perreault, it's very reasonable
mm-hmm.
for a veteran forward who can give you 20-plus goals, 45 to 50-plus points.
If he's healthy, absolutely, yeah.
And again, Drew, I realized a lot of people, you know, on Twitter have you know, when they saw the Perreault contract, they've mentioned his health. Sure, there are concerns. He's a smaller player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's about my height. I'd like to say he's about my weight, but he's not.
No.
I mean, he's a smaller player, right?
Not your weight.
But this guy, you know, I can say this much. Yeah. I know for a fact, pro scouts that were coming into MTS Center to watch Andrew Ladd last season were asking about the availability of Matthew Perreault. And as far as I'm concerned, from what I've been told, at no point was Matthew Perreault available. So pro scouts have said that Matthew Perreault was a guy that they would be willing to tell their teams to acquire. And he wasn't available because he fits in so well. When you think about the loss of Michael Frolik, it would have been devastating if they didn't have Matthew Perreault on this team because he kind of fills that same Michael Frolik role.
What about this contract? It's obvious that the Jets organization put a significant priority on getting Matthew Perreault under contract just
yes.
as soon as he was eligible to sign an extension on July 1st.
Well, they don't want to go later into the season with him being a pending UFA because another guy that I'm not sure if he gets that same extension is Drew Stafford.
Sure. I think that the team has obviously prioritized Matthew Perreault over Drew Stafford, but I think that's a function to some degree of Matthew Perreault being younger. And I think Matthew Perreault, with the flexibility that he provides, you mentioned being able to play wing and center. And the Jets have obviously had a connection going back to the Manitoba Moose days
yep.
when Matthew Perreault was playing for the Hershey Bears.
Yep.
And led the Hershey Bears to the Calder Cup Championship against the Moose here in Winnipeg. They're familiar with Matthew Perreault going way back. They've obviously made a priority on having him in the organization, signing him to that three-year deal when he became an unrestricted free agent, and now re-signing him to that four-year contract. And I think your point is, you know, Matthew Perreault can play up and down the lineup, play center or wing, like you were saying, you can play top six if you need him.
On this team, it's most likely going to be wing.
Well, no, you know, it's interesting you say that. Paul Maurice, after the contract was signed, Maurice intimated that when Perreault was forced into playing center at the end of last year because of all the injuries and whatnot, he liked his game at center. It sounded like he liked his game even more at center than he did at wing.
Right, but just because he likes his game doesn't mean that's going to translate, Drew, because if you think about it, if he's going to play center, he's not playing on the first line.
Right.
He's most likely not playing on the second line. So if he's on the third line, you're obviously going with more of a scoring line.
Shouldn't you?
Right.
But then you have now.
But then you have issues with now not having established veterans on the wing. Like, I realize everybody wants to have Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor in the top six. And as far as I'm concerned, Laine will be a top six forward this year. But you still want to have the option of having Matthew Perreault on the wing. And he's been excellent in that second wing, second line, pardon me, wing position. So regardless, it's not a debate that I think is really relevant here, because we're talking about his contract. Needless to say that when you're talking about Perreault, he's a bona fide top six NHL forward. And the Jets, after Brian Little and Blake Wheeler, don't have very many veteran bona fide top six forwards. In fact, those are the only three that they have after Drew Stafford. You can throw in Drew Stafford in there as well, Drew, but it's a young team and they needed to lock him up.
Yeah, I mean, it's a four-year deal. It's the $4.125 million, as I mentioned. You know, if you look at some of the contract comparables, you know, one of the names that jumped out, Jori Lehterä. Now, he plays center for the Blues, but he signed a deal where, you know, for worth $4.8 million per season, pardon me, $4.7 per season, and he doesn't have the offensive game that Matthew Perreault has last year, only 34 points. Perreault, if he stays healthy, you know, you're getting a potential 45-50-point guy. If he stays healthy, that's the big asterisk. And it's hard to find those guys. And this is what a 40 to 50 point guy in the NHL gets paid. And the Jets know what they have in Matthew Perreault. He's a professional. They know what they can put him into, all sorts of different roles. They like him playing the half wall on the power play. I mean, I think that they see him as a very good, you know, probably a second power play unit guy, where the Jets special teams have struggled for how many years now. Have the Jets power play been one of the, last year was one of the worst in the entire NHL. So now you're just building your power play depth. You're building your offensive depth. You're getting three scoring lines, a bona fide third line, which is something the Winnipeg Jets haven't really had since in the last 5 years.
Right. Well, they had that when they acquired Jiří Tlusti and Lee Stempniak the year the Jets went to the playoffs. That was the only year that they've had a bona fide third line. But, you know, back to what you said before, Drew, about the Jets prioritizing signing Matthew Perreault. And I think it goes back to what I was saying before. I really don't think that they wanted to have Matthew Perreault going into the later part of the season up until the NHL trade deadline being a pending UFA. So I think they acknowledge that that could have been a possibility. They signed him because it's I think there's a strong possibility that Drew Stafford is not re-signed, just based on the plethora of other forwards the Jets are going to have to sign. They still have to sign Adam Lowry. And when you talk about Nikolaj Ehlers, okay, now a couple of years from now, they're going to have to sign him. He's most likely going to make $4 to $6 million a year, right? Probably closer to $6 million a year the way he's going. So I think that Matthew Perreault was a guy they said, we got to lock him up now.
Yeah, and at a reasonable price tag of just over $4 million per year. Let's head to break. When we come back, more on the Winnipeg Jets. We'll look at Jacob Trouba. We'll look at some of the other contract signings from earlier in the week that the Jets re-signed to a two-way deal, of course, that being Brendan Kitchen. We'll talk about how this all affects the upcoming expansion draft. More on the Jets upcoming. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Shifley with a check mark. Perreault with a check mark. Jacob Trouba with a question mark. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 9:30 in the morning, the 9th of July here on TSN 1290. Before we talk about Jacob Trouba, I want to mention what a great day we had out yesterday at Bell Acres as part of the Bell Acres Pro-Am presented by Illegal Curve. A fantastic day.
Yeah, it was.
A beautiful day. The golf, I mean, our golf wasn't fantastic, but that's to be expected. We definitely put the am in amateur, but we had a great day out at Bell Acres. The course is in immaculate shape. The greens were lightning quick. Terrific fun was had by all the pros. Big shout out to Robbie McMillan. He was the big winner among the professionals, shooting, I believe, a 66 is what I believe his total was yesterday. I guess that's a 6 under 66 to win the Bell Acres Pro-Am presented by Illegal Curve. A great day yesterday out at Bell Acres.
Yeah, it really was an awesome day. And, you know, you talk about Rob McMillan. Rob McMillan was a former member of the Canadian Tour, a winner on the Canadian Tour, Manitoba Golf Hall of Famer. So it's pretty awesome that he was the first winner of the Bell Acres Pro-Am. So congratulations to Rob. And yeah, got to give a big thanks to Jamie Chapman and Grady Manson. They did an awesome job with the tournament. It was a beautiful day.
Yeah.
There were whole prizes. There was food. You know what I probably liked the best?
The free beer, I would imagine, is what you liked the best.
The free beer was awesome. But remember the hole that had that table of fruit on it?
Yeah.
And then there was a cooler of beer underneath that table. Like, it was kind of like they were disguising the beer. Oh, here, take some fresh, healthy fruit. I just went right past that, Drew, and grabbed
the
Bud Light.
You're like a bloodhound. You can sniff out beer from a mile away, even in a cooler. It's an impressive quality.
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, the whole event was awesome. We're already talking about doing it again next year. So again, thanks to everybody at Bell Acres. It was tons of fun.
Absolutely.
I'm actually hitting the course again today. I'm not hitting Bell Acres, but I'm back on the course, Drew, because I have to work on that putting.
Yeah, your putting is a little shaky. I agree. Anyways, check it out, bellacres.com, for more information. So Jacob Trouba, no word yet on those contract negotiations. Obviously, the Jets took care of Scheifele. Are they taking care of Perreault? Do you have any concerns, you know, that July 9th, or do you think the Jets, you know, said, look, we're going to deal with Scheifele first, and we're going to deal with Perreault, and now they're going to shift their focus to Jacob Trouba and try and hammer out a contract extension in what most people are expecting is going to be a more contentious negotiation than what we saw with either Perreault or Scheifele?
Right, and I don't think either of us, Drew, are expecting Jacob Trouba to sign an 8-year contract. I mean, it's possible, but I don't think that Jacob Trouba is as much of a certainty as Mark Scheifele. So you're right. I'm not surprised that Jacob Trouba hasn't signed yet. And a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about this offer sheet business with the Boston Bruins potentially signing him to an offer sheet. But look at Drew. I mean, Jacob Trouba right now is coming off a season in which he struggled, and not just offensively. He switched over to the left side to play with Dustin Byfuglien on that second pair. Enstrom and Myers were the top pair, and it was Byfuglien and Trouba on the second pair.
Well, it's worth pointing out that he spent most of his year still with Mark Stewart. It was only towards the end of the year.
Yeah, but I'm talking about just last year.
I know. And he still spent most of his year with Mark Stewart, and then it was only sort of towards the end of the year, and as circumstances changed, that they tried the Byfuglien experiment with Trouba on the left side.
It was a significant portion of the season.
It was a significant portion, but he still played the majority of the year with Mark Stewart.
Sure, but needless to say, he struggled with Mark Stewart as well when he was playing on the right side. Cool. So, I mean, you don't think he struggled last year?
I think he struggled last year. I think the big question regarding Jacob Trouba is, were his struggles last year a function of playing with Mark Stewart, who, with all due respect to Mark Stewart, is a guy who's at the tail end of his career, or were they a function of Jacob Trouba, you know, maybe not developing, you know, as the Jets would hope? And I think it's probably, to some extent, a combination, but I'm very curious if Jacob Trouba was to spend an entire season away from Mark Stewart, what his numbers would look like.
Okay, it's a valid question. I think regardless of who he was playing with, he was struggling.
Okay.
21 points was horrible for a guy that you were expecting to possibly closer to 40 points.
It was his worst offensive season in the NHL,
right?
Stat numbers wise.
Right.
Absolutely.
And he struggled defensively as well. And when he was on the power play, he was not effective. So when you're talking about Trouba, I think what makes it even more difficult is that he's coming off of a bad year. And sure, Mark Stewart didn't have a very good year either, Drew, but there was some adjustment when he moved to the left side from the right side. But I think when you're Jacob Trouba and his agent, and you're asking for 6 or 7 years, and you're asking for $5 to $5.5 million a year, you're the Winnipeg Jets, and you're saying, well, we're already paying Dustin Byfuglien $6 million plus a year. We're already paying Tobias Enstrom $5 million plus a year. Tyler Myers is already making $5 million plus a year. So now you're going to throw Jacob Trouba into that mix, and you're going to have the most expensive blue line in the NHL. The Jets already are up there for the most expensive blue line in the NHL. So I think that they're not as certain. I think they would prefer to give him a 4 or 5 year contract, but that's a little bit trickier because then you're going to be in a situation closer to his UFA years.
Well, if you give him 4 years and then he hits unrestricted free agency, you know, for at the end of that contract when he's still only,
right,
you know, 20, 25 years of age.
I don't think that's going to happen, Drew. I think it's 5 years or 6 years. I would be surprised if it was 8 years. Based on what happened with Zach Bogosian, I don't think the Jets want to sign him to an 8-year contract. Maybe most 7, but even for me, it would most likely be 5 or 6 years. We know that a bridge contract is not going to happen.
Well, are you sure of that? I'm not certain that a bridge contract's not going to happen. I think Jacob Trouba would be, you know, would consider a bridge contract and say, I think I can do better than 21 points. So if you give me a bridge contract, I'm going to throw it down your throat because I'm going to outperform that, and you're going to have to pay me real big 2 years from now.
I think the chances of a bridge contract are very, very minuscule. I think both sides want a longer-term contract, and right now it's just about getting the right number. And I realize a lot of people think that Jacob Trouba is on the trading block, and we've heard various reports that the Winnipeg Jets were possibly considering trading Jacob Trouba. But as it stands right now, Drew, the Jets have to get a defenseman back for Jacob Trouba. If you take Jacob Trouba out of the lineup, who do you replace Jacob Trouba with? I mean, Josh Morrissey, all due respect, he's a good, young, and up-and-coming defenseman. He can't step right into the lineup in your top four and play with Buff. I mean, they don't have anybody, whether that's, you know, you're going to put Ben Chiarot there or you're going to put
they have a hole
Brian Strait there.
They have a hole on the left side.
They
clearly
need,
a hole
they need
on
Jacob
the left
Trouba. I'm not saying that the Jets should trade Jacob Trouba. In fact, I'm saying that they should sign him. I just think that what I'm saying is right now, I think they're quite a ways apart as far as the amount of money per year. And this is something that I could see dragging on, you know, well into August, especially when you consider that the Jets also have some other RFAs they got to sign. Adam Lowry's another guy. That shouldn't be a problem. But needless to say, Trouba, I think, is asking for more money than the Jets want to pay him, simply put.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. I think that, you know, his agent, Kurt Overhart, is known to drive a very hard demand for his clients, as he probably should for his client, be a strong advocate. Kurt Overhart, of course, was the agent for Ryan Johansson, who did have that brief. It's not a contract holdout because he wasn't under contract, but who had a brief contract dispute with the Columbus Blue Jackets a couple of seasons ago. This is a fascinating one because, I mean, you look at what Seth Jones just signed for in Columbus, and by anybody's definition, I would think that you would say that Seth Jones is a better defenseman than Jacob Trouba is right now. So Seth Jones signs for 6 years and $5.4 million per season as a cap hit. Well, it's hard for Jacob Trouba to go to the Winnipeg Jets or Kurt Overhart to go to the Winnipeg Jets and demand more than $5.4 million per season.
And that's both in the average annual value and the amount of years. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like when you talk about Mark Scheifele, Drew, what he's done, the way he's developed, we can sit here, and we did during the first segment, we can say we have no problem with that. I mean, Mark Scheifele is a bona fide number one center in the NHL. He can get 8 years, and he can make $6 million plus per year. Jacob Trouba, do we know that he's a bona fide top two defenseman? I don't think we do. He's great. Yeah. He's shown a lot of signs, but on this team, he's still not the best defenseman. I mean, Tyler Myers and Dustin Byfuglien, to me, are the two best defensemen on the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, you could argue Jacob Trouba has the higher upside, but you can't sign a guy just on upside.
Look, the problem is one that we've discussed ad nauseum, is that the Jets have too much depth on the right side of their defense, and they don't have enough depth on the left side of their defense.
Yep.
And, you know, last year they asked Jacob Trouba to play some minutes on the left side with Dustin Byfuglien, and, you know, was it a smashing success? No, I don't think anybody would say it was a smashing success, but I think it was a better alternative right now, given the options that they have available. It's a better alternative than Jacob Trouba playing third pairing right side minutes with Mark Stewart.
Well, you're right. And if Jacob Trouba does sign with the Winnipeg Jets, I expect him to play on the left side of the second pair. And that's something that he is somewhat familiar with, but being a right shot guy,
It's not easy.
So,
well, you remember when Jacob Trouba broke into the NHL, they tried to move Zach Bogosian to the left side and play them as a pairing. That was in Trouba's rookie season. That didn't last very long because it just didn't work. Zach Bogosian wasn't comfortable with making that transition, and it's not an easy transition to make. And so Jacob Trouba, he's never going to be as fully comfortable on the left side as he is on the right side, but can he make the transition enough to give the Jets at least a bridge until their next left side defenseman is ready to come in and other circumstances change maybe, and maybe there's a spot that opens up on the right side or whatever it may be. At least for now, given the circumstances that the Winnipeg Jets have on their defense, can Jacob Trouba play the left side enough to be serviceable at least with Dustin Byfuglien or with Tyler Myers or whomever?
By the way, I know a lot of people, you know, think that there's a good chance that Jacob Trouba is traded. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that he's traded just because it would leave such a big hole on the Jets' defense. They've so much invested in Jacob Trouba, bringing him into the NHL 1 year after the University of Michigan. Not saying that Jacob Trouba has some growing up to do as a defenseman, but I just don't see the Jets trading him unless they get a bona fide top four defenseman back.
Look, when Nashville traded Seth Jones, who'd they get in return? They got Ryan Johansson. Right. Ryan Johansson is a top line center.
It would have to be, Drew, a one for one trade where you're getting a young defenseman similar to Jacob Trouba back. They're not going to trade him for a forward. They don't need any forwards. I mean, the Jets have enough forwards. That's where they're the strongest.
Right.
I mean, we're already talking about guys like Joel Armia and Marco Dano possibly being fourth-line guys for this team this year, right? Because of Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine. So the Jets, if they do trade him, which, I don't personally think they are going to trade him, they would have to be getting a left-side defenseman back and probably similar age, similar skill set to Jacob Trouba.
A young left-side defenseman would be what you're saying. And that would work. Look, if the Winnipeg Jets could have a magic potion and turn Jacob Trouba into a left-shooting defenseman, then they'd be the happiest team in the NHL. Unfortunately, that doesn't exist. And as far as I know, he's not ambidextrous. So he's going to be a prime... His strong side is the right side, unless he's able to really make a transition that is very difficult for a lot of players to make.
For example, if Jacob Trouba is traded to Boston, you got to get Torrey Krug coming back.
And that's not enough, I don't think.
Well, Torrey Krug's a good defenseman.
He's an offensive... Yeah, he's definitely an offensive defenseman.
He's a left-side defenseman. He's similar age. He's a couple years older.
They just signed him to a four-year contract.
I'm just saying he's in the ballpark of who you would expect to come back the other way.
Right. Fair enough. It'll be interesting to see how the circumstances shake out between the Jets, of course, and Jacob Trouba. Let's head to break. When we return, we're going to look. We didn't have enough time last week. We'll get to it this week. Free agency recap. The Atlantic Division is up. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
History made at the All England Club as Serena Williams ties Steffi Graf for the all-time lead in singles championships in the majors. Serena Williams victorious over Angela Kerber today at Wimbledon. Of course, tomorrow, Milos Raonic goes for the men's championship. That match can be heard. Milos Raonic versus Andy Murray can be heard, of course, live here.
Another game for Milos!
There you go, Roy. Another game for Milos. Tomorrow, 8 a.m., Milos Raonic versus Andy Murray in the Wimbledon Men's Championship. Of course, the weigh-in with a recap of UFC 200 follows that. And then Portugal versus France in Euro 2016, the championship match there. And then a huge day concludes with Sunday Night Baseball here on TSN 1290. So you got Wimbledon, you got the weigh-in, you got soccer championship, and then you got baseball all tomorrow here on your home for sports in Winnipeg, TSN 1290.
You know, Drew, I got to say, I missed the first minute of the segment, unfortunately. I had to step outside the studio, but without Richie here, it's a lot harder because if I left the studio to, you know, go grab a water or something, Rich was here, but now I left you all by yourself. Sorry about that, Drew. I know you don't like to be left alone. So
I was perfectly okay. I was promoting our coverage of tomorrow's Wimbledon men's final and mentioning that Serena Williams just won earlier today, just minutes ago, defeating Angelique Kerber in two sets.
Did we play the Milos clip?
We played the Milos clip. We're not playing it again.
I didn't hear it.
I know you didn't hear it. That's because you went off away somewhere to get water or something.
Rory, let's play it again.
We're not playing it again.
Play it again.
Good. Another game for Milos!
We were having a fight before because I was saying that we don't need to play that clip because Libel and The Big Show have been playing that clip all week long, and we don't want to piggyback on their routine. That's their routine. We have our own routines, but apparently I was soundly outvoted by you.
Can't we piggyback on Libel, Troy, and Sticky Ruwicky?
Because we're different people. We're different shows. That's their
business.
We're
all friends, though, Drew. This is one big TSN 1290 family.
going to be difficult.
We sit around the dinner table. We all love each other. We can piggyback.
Can we talk about the
Atlantic? I couldn't give you a piggyback. I think my back would break, but not because you're heavy, just because my back is terrible.
Your back
but
is lousy.
Piggyback in the figurative sense.
Can we continue on talking about free agency recap now?
If you'd like.
Thank you. Let's talk with the Boston Bruins. You mentioned Torrey Krug as somebody the Jets would have to theoretically get in return for a Jacob Trouba deal. He signs a four-year contract extension with the Bruins. It's $21 million, average annual value of $5.25 million. The Bruins then dip into the unrestricted free agency market. They get David Backes for 5 years and $30 million, an average annual value of $6 million. They get offensive defenseman John Michael Lyles for 1 year and $2 million, and then they shore up their backup goaltender position with a guy they're very familiar with. That's Anton Khudobin. He gets 2 years and $2.4 million. Your thoughts on the Bruins moves? Let's start with the Backes one, because that's really the only guy who's coming that's new to the organization.
Yeah, Drew, you know I've always been a huge David Backes fan, and you know, we remember how the season ended for David Backes with the St. Louis Blues losing to the San Jose Sharks in the third round, and yeah, and David Backes was in tears and he was really upset. I think he knew at that point, he probably knew actually, Drew, before the playoffs started, that that was going to be his last year in St. Louis,
mm-hmm,
because he wasn't re-signed and he was a UFA. But I like the signing. What concerns me a little bit with the Boston Bruins is that their defense is still not as good, certainly as it was back in 2011 when they won the Stanley Cup, but to me it's still got holes in it.
Sure.
And Zdeno Chara, we know, he's only got a couple years left in the NHL. He's in his late 30s now. He's just not the same defenseman as he was, even though he did have a pretty good offensive year last year. But when you're talking about the Bruins, you know, going back a couple years, they lost Johnny Boychuk to the New York Islanders. They lost, well, they traded Dougie Hamilton to the Calgary Flames. Mm-hmm. Dennis Seidenberg was bought out. So, you know, you mentioned Backes signing, and then you mentioned John Michael Lyles. Well, John Michael Lyles is just a depth defenseman at this point. He's a guy, he's a 6 or 7 defenseman.
Yeah.
And he can skate still. I mean, he's older now. He's certainly not the speedy guy that he once was, Drew. But I look at this Bruins team, and I didn't like the move with Florida last year when they traded Riley Smith for Jimmy Hayes. Jimmy Hayes did not have a good year. He only scored 13 goals. They were expecting him to be more of a 25-30 goal guy.
Mm-hmm.
And look at this Bruins team, and you're still very strong up the middle with Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci, and Brad Marchand is going to get a new contract, we expect.
Well, he's still got 1 year left.
1 year, but yeah, we're expecting him to get a 6-year extension. You know, he's the type of guy that I expect to finish his career in Boston. He really has become, Marchand and Bergeron have become the face of this franchise, Drew.
He had 37 goals last year. I mean,
yeah, no, he was incredible. He was a top 5 goal scorer in the league.
Yeah.
But needless to say, this Bruins team, I mean, Tuukka Rask, I still think is a good goaltender, but is Tuukka Rask going to be able to get back to being the dominant Tuukka Rask that he was 4 or 5 years ago?
Probably not with that defense in front of him.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, when you look at the team, and after Zdeno Chara and after Torrey Krug, I mean, they're very thin on defense. Mm-hmm. You know, Kevin Miller playing big minutes. I mean, he's a journeyman defenseman at this point in his career. Like, I look at this Bruins team in an improving Atlantic division, Drew, with the Florida Panthers.
Yeah.
Like, the Florida Panthers are only getting better. And we'll talk about them more later on in the show.
Second half of the show, yeah.
But I look at the Florida Panthers. They're the class of this division. And I look at the
more than the Lightning?
Yeah, I would say so.
Really?
Especially, well, the Lightning are a good team, but I would say maybe the class is the wrong word.
But
I would
they're a playoff team.
I would say that the Panthers are the most promising team in this division.
Fair enough.
And I worry if Ben Bishop is traded from Tampa Bay, if things start to fall apart a little bit there. And I do have some concerns about their depth on defense, the Tampa Bay Lightning. But needless to say, when you've got Aaron Ekblad,
yeah,
and you've got Jonathan Huberdeau and Alexander Barkov, and you've got a guy like Lawson Crouse coming into the NHL, the Panthers are an up-and-coming team. So I look at this division and I say they're not better than the Panthers or the Lightning. And then you look at the Sabres going out and acquiring Kyle Okposo.
Kyle Okposo gets 7 years, yep, and $42 million, a $6 million salary cap hit for Okposo.
So, see, to me, Drew, the Bruins are a team.
And they got Dmitry Kulikov in a trade at the draft from the Florida Panthers, you mentioned.
The Bruins are kind of going sideways a little bit here. They're stuck in the mud a little bit. I understand. You lose Louis Erickson to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. You have to replace his offense. So you get David Backes in there, and he kind of replaces that toughness that Milan Lucic brought to the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
But David Backes, again, his better offensive years are probably behind him. He's in his early 30s now.
32.
Not to say that he won't be a good team. And, hey, I think the Boston Bruins are going to be competitive for a playoff spot, but I certainly look at the rest of the teams in the division, and especially the Sabres with Jack Eichel there, and then they drafted Alex Nylander this year. I mean, the Sabres are an up-and-coming team. I think 3 or 4 years from now, that team is going to be phenomenal. And, you know, they're going to have to sort out the whole Vander Kane situation. I don't think he'll necessarily factor into the future plans there. That's just my opinion. But when you look at all the young players that are coming up into the system, Rasmus Ristolainen had a great year last year. He's an up-and-coming defenseman for them. Sam Reinhart. I mean, needless to say, Drew, this division right now, the Boston Bruins are looking at one of those teams that they're still good. They've still got a lot of good players, but that defense, I look at it and I say, okay, well, you could have easily brought in. That's why Jacob Trouba probably would have been or could be a good option there. But a player like that, I mean, they need another puck-moving defenseman to round out that defense, because right now it's just not a very good group of defensemen.
Right, and you know, it doesn't matter almost how good your forwards are if you can't defend in your own zone. I mean, because they have a good group of forwards, at least for the next few years before they really begin to age out.
Again, and I've always been a big fan of the big bad Bruins, but the days of 2011, 2012, when Zdeno Chara would play 30 minutes a game mm-hmm. and anchor that defense, those days are over. He just can't do that anymore.
Let's look at the perennial playoff-bound Detroit Red Wings. Their big move was getting Franz Nielsen under contract, 6 years, $31.5 million, $5.25 million per season.
Like that signing.
Darren Helm, they re-sign him, gets 5 years, $19.25 million. St. Andrews, of course, Manitoba celebrates. Nightmare on Helm Street, $3.85 million per year. And then they take a bit of a flyer on Thomas Vanek, 1 year, $2.6 million for
You know what? Well, let's get into
Mercurial.
It. I don't like the Vanek signing. I've never been a big Thomas Vanek
fan.
But
it's 1 year and it doesn't kill him.
Sure. I mean, you wasted $2.5 million in my opinion, because once it gets to the playoffs, it's Thomas Vanek.
Yeah.
So we'll start with Franz Nielsen.
Bravo. Well done.
That wasn't my original material.
I didn't think it was.
Franz Nielsen, we know how good of a two-way forward he's been. I remember Richie was talking about him 4 years ago as being an underrated forward. I don't think he's underrated anymore with the amount of money he's getting.
He can't be underrated and get a $31.5 million contract.
But he fits in perfectly with that team. It's a skilled team. They're not, like, as compared to a team like the St. Louis Blues, for example, a more heavy team. Mm-hmm. This Detroit Red Wings team is built on speed and scoring, and Franz Nielsen is a guy that gives them a reliable two-way presence, and Thomas Vanek gives them a veteran guy that they can put on the third line, will hopefully chip in 15 or 20 goals. In my opinion, he's just too one-dimensional to be somebody who's playing a significant role in the NHL. But, you know, again, the Red Wings are kind of a similar team to the Boston Bruins. You know, we've heard that they could be possibly moving Jimmy Howard. Peter Mrazek is an RFA right now, but Peter Mrazek, Drew, is the future goalie of this team,
mm-hmm.
and you know, there's things to be excited about. I mean, Dylan Larkin was an excellent rookie. They got him later in the first round, and he's an excellent young winger. But this Red Wings defense is, again, not as good as it once was. It's kind of been searching for someone. They brought in Mike Green to add offense, and he has.
Yeah. But it's long in the tooth. I mean,
yes.
Your youngest defenseman there is Alexei Marchenko.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
and Marchenko's a good young defenseman, but you're talking about, you know, Nicholas Cronwall, Jonathan Erickson, these guys are getting
30s.
Older. Danny DeKeyser is a guy who filed for arbitration. He's a good young defenseman, but he's more of a third or fourth defenseman.
He's not even that young anymore. He's 26 years old.
Right. Well, he played college, right?
Yeah, of course.
So, but when you're talking about this team, I still think it's a team that can get into the playoffs,
because
you have an abundance of skill there. I mean, Gustav Nyquist, Thomas Tatar, Riley Sheahan.
Are you concerned about giving a guy like Nielsen, who's 32 years old, 6 years? I mean, or is that just the way the market was going, you know, this offseason with free agency, is that any sort of even older free agent was getting big number of years, which I think was a surprise to most people.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good question. And I think ideally Ken Holland and the Red Wings probably wanted to give Franz Nielsen 4 years.
Yeah.
But when you're Franz Nielsen and you know this is your big contract, that's why you push for those extra 2 years. I think when he gets a little bit older, that contract might be a bit of an albatross. But right now, Franz Nielsen is an established player. Put it this way, Drew. I think the Islanders are going to miss Franz Nielsen more than Kyle Okposo. Hmm. I think the Islanders, I realize they signed Andrew Ladd, But
and we'll talk about the Metropolitan.
Nielsen was one of those Swiss Army knife type of guys that could play on the power play, play on the penalty kill, good face-off guy.
When you lose your center depth, it really does hurt. I mean, almost more than it does on the wing, because centermen are so valuable, and Franz Nielsen was so valuable to the New York Islanders.
Yep. He'll be a good player for Detroit.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll go out to Montreal and speak with Arpin Basu. He covers the Habs for NHL.com. We'll talk about what has been an exciting offseason in La Belle Province. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you this Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Arpin Basu. Arpin is the managing editor of LNH.com, which is, of course, NHL.com en français. You can read his work on NHL.com.
Ligue
as
Nationale
well.
De Hockey.
Well, Ezzy, you are much more fluent in the French language than I am. Arpin, good morning, and thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning, guys.
How are you?
I am well.
Arpin, it's okay. I have a French immersion diploma, so I can. If you need to do this interview in French, I can do it.
Clearly, you're shining. I'm very impressed.
Yes, thank you so much for that. Arpin obviously brought you on to talk about the Montreal Canadiens offseason, an offseason of upheaval, I would suggest to say. Now that we are sort of outside the eye of the Hurricane, of course, being the PK Subban for Shea Weber trade, you know, has the attitude in Montreal changed at all regarding the trade? Are people maybe coming on around to it? Or are there still sort of, I don't know if upset is the right word, or still sort of eyebrows significantly raised regarding the trade that rocked the hockey world a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, no. No, there's no. The attitudes haven't changed, and they probably won't change for quite some time here. I mean, basically, the fact here is that it's going to be incumbent on Shea Weber to actually change attitudes about this trade in Montreal. And that's the unfortunate reality of this whole thing, is that every Montreal is pretty much going to need to be proven wrong about this thing. Because I think, by and large, I don't want to say everyone, by and large, most people in the city think that Marc Bergevin got hosed on this deal. And, you know, they're probably right. And so Shea Weber is being put into a pretty difficult situation in the sense that he's got to come in and they're going to have to see results. You know, Canadiens fans are going to have to see results pretty soon in order to be convinced that this trade that actually made the team better. And I'm skeptical that he's going to be able to do that. Now, I don't think his own personal performance is what's going to determine that. If the team gets off to a good start, he's playing, you know, 25, 26 minutes a night and playing sound hockey, then that probably will change a few minds. But, you know, in the long term, it's hard to see how the Canadiens are going to come out winners in this deal.
Arpin, it's been a couple of weeks now since PK Subban was traded to Nashville for Shea Weber. Now that, you know, the dust has settled a little bit, I guess in Montreal, they're probably still pretty upset about it. But now that you think about it and you're around the team a lot, how much of an impact did the relationship between PK Subban and Michel Therrien have on the trade?
I think it had a pretty significant one. I mean, in the sense that it kept coming up that, you know, his decision making would often be questioned by the coach, and, you know, clock management would come up, and game management, and just sort of, you know, risk management is something that Michel Therrien often disagree with PK Subban. And it wasn't that, you know, Subban would make a mistake and then say, okay, yeah, I made a mistake. he wouldn't admit to making a mistake. I mean, it was a recurring thing where, you know, Terry was like, oh, he'll learn from this, and in the future he'll make a different decision. Then he talks to Pika too, and he's like, you know what, if I had to do it again, I would. It happened all the time. It's like I've written that story like 15 times, you know, where you know, Therrien said something and Subban said something. We had a philosophical difference about how the game of hockey should be played. I think Subban and Peter Laviolette don't have that philosophical difference. So in that sense, it's probably a way better fit for him in Nashville than it was in Montreal.
Arpin Basu is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Montreal Canadiens offseason. Arpin, can you be a big personality and play for the Montreal Canadiens and succeed with the Montreal Canadiens long term? I look at the last two sort of big personalities that played for the Habs. PK Subban obviously dealt to Nashville, and then going back, you know, 23 years now, or give or take however many years ago it was, 20 years ago, Patrick Waugh getting traded to Colorado. You know, can you be a big personality and succeed under the umbrella of the Montreal Canadiens organization?
It doesn't help, honestly. It's the culture of the team. If you're a big personality, and if you become a larger than life figure, it's not going to help you. I mean, it's not going to be seen as, you know, as something that's beneficial to the team, because the culture of the organization just, I mean, the last guy to actually be that way and survive was Guy Lafleur. Everyone else who has kind of gotten big, Chris Chelios, you can go back, you know, he got traded for Denis Savard. Mm-hmm. Aging Denis Savard was probably the worst trade in franchise history. Every time a player has just gotten too big for his own good, in quotation marks, teams tend to trade that guy. And it's just strange because most organizations are looking for that guy. They're looking for that guy that you can market the team around, that you can sort of make the face of the franchise. And the Canadiens don't want that. And that's why, like, in the sense that, I mean, Carey Price is such an understated guy. Like, he has personality, but he just doesn't show it.
Sure.
And Shea Weber is the same kind of deal. I mean, Shea Weber doesn't even have a Twitter account. Like, if you want a guy who's like the polar opposite of PK Subban in terms of public persona, they got it. Quiet, understated, strong, silent type. He's the guy. So in that sense, you know, Canes come out with a big win, except I think for most teams, and especially a team like Nashville, who's, you know, who's still trying to sell people on the game of hockey, a guy like PK Subban is a gold mine. He's a total gold mine. And he's going to sell tickets for the Nashville Predators.
Along those same lines, Arpin, you know, the donation that PK Subban made to the Children's Hospital, you know, the largest single donation made by an athlete, was that viewed inside the Habs organization differently than it was, say, in the general public? Where, you know, you give $10 million to a hospital, you're going to be pretty much praised to the high heavens. Privately, you know, sort of behind the scenes, was there a different attitude maybe taken quietly, albeit, about that donation in the Habs organization?
No, I don't think so. There's no way you can't look at that in any way other than to clap your hands and say congratulations, like, good, well done. You know, I don't think anyone saw it any differently, but the attention it generated added to the divide, I guess, in the sense that it made him, you know, more of a singular entity in terms of his popularity, especially in the States. I mean, and you know, like, I did a story around Christmas. I spoke to the president of the Montreal Children's Hospital Foundation, and she said that their clippings file from that press conference in September was about 3 or 4 inches thick. And they had stories from as far away as Australia, Japan, you know, all over Europe. I mean, this was exposure for the hospital that they had never seen. But I will say, the day that thing got announced, like, I heard about it on the radio. The Canadians heard about it on the radio. They had no idea that that was happening. Like, PK did not give them a heads up. And so it was something he did himself with the hospital. They organized a press conference. It went out to the regular news media. It didn't even go out to the Canadians media corps. So, you know, I'm not saying that that is something that, you know, anyone held a grudge over, but I can say that when you're making an announcement that big, I'm sure the Canadians would like to have had a heads up on it. And so it's just like one of those things that just kind of, you know, it just sort of rubbed them the wrong way. And I think a lot of things that PK Subban did, like the donation didn't rub them the wrong way. Just sure. The fact that they didn't know it was coming.
The way he went about it.
And a lot of things that he did in that sense just sort of rubbed them the wrong way. And now they've taken care of that issue because he's no longer on the team.
Arpin, we've talked a lot about the Shea Weber for PK Subban trade here. Going back to what we were talking about before, offseason and Habs general manager Mark Bergevin, when you look at this defense, now you've got Shea Weber as the Habs' number one defenseman, Andre Markov in the last year of his three-year contract, Jeff Petrie was signed last offseason, Alexei Amelin, Nathan Beaulieu. When you look at this Habs defense, it's not exactly what you would call a top-five defense in the NHL. Are you a little bit surprised that Montreal Canadiens general manager Mark Bergevin didn't go out and try to acquire a top-four defenseman?
No, because they weren't around. I mean, who would he have signed? Like, I guess Jason Demers might have been, but I mean, you know, he was a right-handed defenseman, which I think on the right side, they're pretty much with Petrie and Weber. You know, as great as Subban is, you know, having Weber and Petrie as your, you know, top two on the right side, you could do worse. I mean, the real issue is that Andre Markov's, you know, he's 38. He showed signs last season and the season before of some fatigue over the course of the season. So there's a question mark there. Alexei Amelin makes $4.1 million. I think in an ideal world, they would be able to move that money and get back something, you know, ideally a forward. And it remains to be seen if they do that. I'm not entirely convinced that Emlyn's going to start the season here, but I think the big wild card here that a lot of people are discounting is that this trade was made after the Canadians drafted Mikhail Sergachev, number 9 in the draft. And I am not entirely to Windsor to play the season in the OHL.
Sorry, Arpin, you're actually cutting in and out of us. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, you were just sort of cutting in and out there for a couple seconds.
Sorry. The Sergachev, I mean, he's 18 years old, 220 pounds. He just dominated development camp, and you know, the Canadiens head of development, Martin Lapointe, you know, came out and said, you know, it's not crazy to think that he'll be playing here next season. And I've never heard him or anyone from the organization say that about an 18-year-old kid. In my, you know, even Alex Galchenyuk, they wouldn't say that.
Sure.
Like, it was so, if you look down the road a little bit, Shea Weber kind of makes, like, an ideal partner for a left-handed Mikhail Sergachev. So there might be, I think he might have played into sort of this decision-making a little bit.
Certainly worse mentors to have than Shea Weber for young Mikhail Sergachev. Arpin, we'll let you go on this final question. The Habs, you know, did make another acquisition. That is getting Andrew Shaw from the Blackhawks, and they signed him to that big six-year contract extension worth $23.4 million. What are the expectations for Andrew Shaw from the Montreal Canadiens organization? We know he's obviously going to make the Habs grittier and tougher to play against, but offensively, you know, Shaw is a guy who, you know, has never reached 40 points in the NHL. So what offensive expectations do the Habs have for Andrew Shaw?
I don't think they expect him to do any more than he's done. You know, if he produces at the same rate as the Blackhawks, if he you know, if he hovers around 20 goals a season, which, you know, he's hit once with Chicago, and it's generally around that mark, I think that they'll be pretty happy. I mean, in an ideal world, Andrew Shaw will be playing, you know, on a third line for the Canadiens. Right now, you could argue that he's in line to play, you know, on the left wing, at on the second line, which is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, probably not ideal. So I think if they can have him play more of an energy role and second unit power play time as Brendan Gallagher's understudy, basically, you know, as that, you know, that net front pest on the second unit, which they're kind of missing on that unit, I think they'd be fine with that. If he hovers around 40 points for the entire time that he has his contract, I think the Canadiens will be thrilled. Like, honestly, fans will probably be disappointed because they'll feel he's overpaid, but I think they know exactly what they're getting for that money. And if Andrew Shaw produces the way he produced in Chicago for 6 years, then I think Mark Bergevin will be quite happy.
Arpan Basu is the managing editor of LNH.com. You can, of course, read his work on NHL.com as well, as he covers the Montreal Canadiens. Arpan, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
All right. My pleasure, guys.
Take care. We'll speak to you soon. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Twenty minutes past the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm going to talk Florida Panthers in about 10 minutes' time with their play-by-play broadcaster, Steve Goldstein. He's going to join us here on the program. The Panthers, one of the busiest teams in the entire NHL this offseason, dipping into the free agency market, dipping into the trade market, and then re-signing a lot of their young core. So we'll talk to Steve about that coming up in about 10 minutes' time. You can always follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Also some Manitoba Moose news there as well, as I believe the AHL's Board of Governors meetings wrapped up earlier this week in South Carolina. Some new AHL rules that you can read about on IllegalCurve.com. Ezzy, we continue with our free agency look. We spoke about the Atlantic Division. We'll speak about the Metropolitan Division coming up. Let's look at the Washington Capitals. They really, you know, ultimately, I think a disappointing year for the Caps in how good they were in the regular season, only to lose out to the Pittsburgh Penguins in the playoffs. And then they go out, and the only move that of any significance that they make is that they acquire Lars Eller from the Montreal Canadiens in exchange for 2 second-round picks. Do you like the fit of Lars Eller, a skill guy, in Washington with a skill team?
Yeah, you know, Lars Eller, to me, has always been a bit of an underwhelming player.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that was drafted in the first round by the Montreal Canadiens. That was several years ago now.
St. Louis Blues, actually.
Oh, pardon me, St. Louis Blues. And then traded
part of the, for the Halak deal.
That's right. I misspoke there, Drew. He was drafted by the Blues, but a first-round pick, and a guy that the Montreal Canadiens kind of had as a third-line center, but a guy that they thought could possibly play top 6 minutes, a guy that was a good penalty killer, actually a guy that hurt the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, 4-goal game, if I recall correctly, back in the day.
He's a guy that hurt the Jets on several occasions, Drew, but when you're talking about the Washington Capitals, you mentioned last season, and they won the President's Trophy, but then got knocked out by the Pittsburgh Penguins in the second round. So in that sense, it was disappointing because this team had their sights set on a Stanley Cup. Wasn't a team that was going to be happy with just being in the playoffs, right? It was a team that wanted to go far. And when you have Alexander Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom and TJ Oshie, and you have Braden Holtby in net, you're a team that knows that they can beat most teams on any given night. So, you know, Lars Eller, it's an interesting trade. You know, you get him for 2 more years at $3.5 million. It's not a cap hit that's going to necessarily hurt you. It's not a contract that you're going to have on the books. He's a guy that you want to pencil in as your third-line center, in my opinion. And a guy like Mike Richards, for example, they had later in the season, he was a guy that they had in the fourth line but were forced to use him as a third line. So Eller just gives you depth, Drew, in your bottom six.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a little bit surprised that the Washington Capitals weren't more active. For example, going out and getting a Dan Hamhuis, which the Dallas Stars did. When I look at this Washington Capitals team, what was the big problem? Sure, the offense dried up a little bit against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the second round, but that defense is not as quick as I think it could be. And Dan Hamhuis is not necessarily going to make you a much faster team, but he's going to be able to help you move the puck. He's a veteran guy, more of a shutdown defenseman, quite honestly.
Sure.
But needless to say, he's a guy that I think someone like him would have helped against the Pittsburgh Penguins to have him on your team. Now, a guy like Madison Bowie is a guy that I know that could be in the top six for the Washington Capitals this year. Certainly a guy that could play significant minutes. Mm-hmm. He's from Manitoba, of course, drafted by the Capitals a few years back.
Second round pick, 53 overall back in 2013.
Yeah, that was at the draft in Newark that we were at, Drew.
Yeah.
And he's a guy that has been a really good junior, and he had a good first year in the AHL last year. So he's a guy that I know they're factoring into their future plans. But, you know, after Matt Niskanen and after John Carlson and Carl Alsner, you know, they're a little bit thin on defense. And, you know, Brooks Orpik, good veteran defenseman. You know, he had the suspension problems last year. And guys like Nate Schmidt and Taylor Chorney were depth guys for them. But I'm just a little bit surprised that they didn't do more, Drew. Because they're all set at forward. I mean, you know, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Oshie, guys like this are sure going to be in your top six. Kuznetsov, Burakovsky.
Johansson, an RFA who did file for arbitration as
right,
well.
Right, and
so
we expect him to sign before it goes to arbitration. But,
sure,
you know, this is a group of forwards that's still very good, and they didn't have to do much. I mean, you're talking about, you know,
You would have liked to see them shore up the defense.
Defense,
as opposed
to, more so. Sure. Bring in a guy, you know, that could either play on your second pair or certainly be an upgrade on your third pair.
Mm-hmm.
And because this team is not going to have any trouble scoring goals, Drew. I mean, they're most likely going to lead the NHL in goals again next year. But just looking at, you know, it's a team that I think you didn't get good performances from Evgeny Kuznetsov or Burakovsky in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think they had a combined 3 points
yeah.
in the playoffs. They were just brutal. And I know that because I took them in my hockey pool. But those guys got to be better. So there are growing pains. Those guys are, you know, young NHLers. So I was a little bit surprised that they didn't do more there.
Moving to Brooklyn, where the Islanders, they made the big splash in re-signing former Jets captain Andrew Ladd. Ladd gets 7 years and $38.5 million. Salary cap hit of $5.5 million. They also dip in getting Jason Chimera for 2 years and $4.5 million, weakening a division rival as he comes over from Washington, of course. Your thoughts on the Ladd contract, first and foremost. Are you surprised that Andrew Ladd, after what was clearly a down year for the former Winnipeg Jets captain, that he was able to get the seven-year term that he was able to get from the New York Islanders?
Drew, I'm a little bit surprised. I thought Andrew Ladd might be a guy who signed for 5 years. And I like the signing for the Islanders, but again, I don't like as a whole what Garth Snow has done here. Because if you look at it, Drew, they've replaced Kyle Okposo, Franz Nielsen, mm-hmm. and Matt Martin with Andrew Ladd, Jason Chimera, and P.A. Parenteau. When you're talking about Andrew Ladd, Jason Chimera, and P.A. Parenteau, you're talking about an average age of 33 or 34 years old there. I mean, we're talking about Jason Chimera. He's 37. Mm-hmm. I like Jason Chimera, and he's actually a guy that I think the Washington Capitals, it's going to be tough to replace
sure.
a guy like Jason Chimera. But
great speed.
P.A. Parenteau's been very inconsistent. You know, he's been a journeyman forward, Colorado. This is his second time being with the New York Islanders. He was sure. on Montreal, didn't work out in Montreal. But needless to say, that you know, you're taking your top power forward off of your top line with John Tavares. You're taking your second line center away. So Andrew Ladd, you know, is going to get to play with John Tavares most likely as the left winger on the top line, and he'll score goals. He'll be okay. It gives them a veteran presence. Just saying, as a whole, I don't know if these three players replace what the Islanders lost. Like, Kyle Okposo is a really good hockey player. He does a lot of things really well, and playing with a guy like John Tavares is not easy. I mean, Andrew Ladd can play with really good players, but Kyle Okposo is a guy that, you know, he didn't need to be playing with John Tavares. They had him on the second line. They put him on the top line for most of last year. But he's a guy that at times played with Franz Nielsen on the second line. So I'm just saying, you know, this Islanders team, I wouldn't say that they took a step back, but I don't know if they took a step forward either in the offseason.
Moving to Philadelphia, their big free agent signing was Dale Weiss, of course, another Manitoba boy. He gets 4 years and $9.4 million, $2.35 million per season. Dale Weiss as a member of the Philadelphia Flyers, you like that? You like that fit? So many ties, of course, between the province of Manitoba and the Philadelphia Flyers organization.
Yeah, I mean, Dale Weiss, we really like him on this show. He's from Winnipeg, and he's one of those guys that I think does the best with the natural skill that he has. I mean, Dale Weiss is a guy, he's a third or fourth liner in the NHL. He's a guy that can drop the gloves, but he's also a guy that has a scoring touch. He works hard. You know, so it's a good depth signing for the Philadelphia Flyers. And we know that the Philadelphia Flyers ultimately, whether or not they take a step forward, is going to depend a lot on the goaltending and a lot on the defense. I mean, when you've got Jakub Voracek and you've got Claude Giroux and Sean Couturier, Wayne Simmonds, I mean, they've got an excellent group of forwards here. And you can throw in Braden Schenn in there, who's an RFA. They've got guys that can put the puck in the net, Drew. But Steve Mason, for example, struggled down the stretch. And Michael Neuwirth is a guy that at times you thought he was going to emerge as the number one goalie. Those guys are both in the last year of their contracts. So what happens there? Who do they decide to go with? I would expect it would be Michael Neuwirth. I think you could get him for a cheaper price. Steve Mason makes $4.1 million this year. Again, that defense, I would probably like to see them go out and acquire someone else. Like Shane Gostisbehere had an excellent rookie season. And, you know, Mark Streit and is aging. Michael Delzato had injury problems last year. He's got 1 year left on his contract.
They should mention they re-signed Radko Gudas as well. He gets four years and $13.4 million.
Right, that's fine. And that's your physical defensive defenseman. Again, I think Philly is waiting for all these young defensemen to come in. So you're talking about Travis Sanheim, Samuel Morin, guys like this that they've drafted in the last few years.
Provorov, of course.
Provorov, sorry. Yeah. Provorov, we should mention, is probably going to get a good shot to play in the NHL this year.
Yeah. Interesting offseason ahead for Philadelphia, especially with them trying to shore up that blue line. Let's head to break. When we come back, Steve Goldstein, the Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster, joins us to talk about the hectic offseason they've had in Florida. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Shortly after 10:30 in the morning, July the 9th, here on TSN 1290, Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Steve Goldstein. Steve is the Florida Panthers play-by-play voice on Fox Sports Florida. Steve, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Nice to be back with you guys. How's everything going?
Doing great, Steve. A little warmer here in Winnipeg than typically when you come by these parts. A nice summer's day, but always good to talk hockey with you, as I'm sure they've been talking a ton of hockey in South Florida. Just a crazy busy offseason for the Florida Panthers so far. You know, in your history with the team, and that's a lengthy history, do you ever remember an offseason that's been quite as hectic as the one you've experienced so far this year?
I really don't. There hasn't been one, and the ones that have been, and nothing's approached this, but the ones that would be hectic at all, in many cases over the years, you know, it hasn't been real good. You know, it's been guys leaving town or coaching changes or, you know, things like that. So it has just been tremendous. It seems like every 24, 48 hours, another move made, another player kept. It's just been, really, it's been a stream of good news. Really over the last 12 months for this team. The draft was here in Florida last year.
Steve, when you look at some of the moves that the Florida Panthers have made, and we're going to get to some of the re-signings, Riley Smith, Vincent Trocheck, of course, former first overall pick, Aaron Ekblad. But when you look at the changes on defense specifically, Brian Campbell leaves in free agency, signs a one-year deal with the Chicago Blackhawks, and then the Panthers trading Eric Goodbranson to the Vancouver Canucks for Jared McCann. When you look at the replacements for Eric Goodbranson and Brian Campbell, those being Jason Demers and Keith Yandle, do you like those replacements?
Well, you know, I wish I knew the philosophy, but our buddy Steve Warrior, who's now assistant general manager, won't return my texts anymore. Yeah,
we don't know who that guy is.
I mean, the guy, you know, he's gone big time, won't buy a lunch. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. Now, in all seriousness, those moves, a tremendous, you know, remake of the blue line. And, you know, I think top to bottom, you know, from ownership, you know, and Dale Callan, president of hockey operations, Tom Rose, now GM, Steve and Eric Joyce, the assistant GMs, it's quite a staff, and they do things collaboratively. And, you know, they thought, and you look at the playoffs in that series. Now, Panthers lost the last three games of that series, 2-1, two of them double overtime to the Islanders. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues they had was, A, the power play, B, you know, generating enough, moving that puck out of the zone, moving it out quickly. We saw what Pittsburgh did with basically Chris Letang, and I think what most of us probably would have classified, and we all underestimated, probably a bunch of fourth and fifth defensemen. So pretty incredible what Pittsburgh did. The key was, you know, I covered this and I was there and listened and talked to Mike Sullivan quite a bit, and that's the encouragement. Play fast. Go back, get the puck, move it ahead to the forwards. And Pittsburgh did a good job of that. I think there was a concerted effort made by the Panthers to do that. And I think the trades were twofold. You know, Kulikov would have been a free agent in 12 months. Goodbranson would have been a free agent the year after. They were combined making nearly $8 million. And, you know, their guys, the Panthers drafted, and those guys played hard for the Panthers. And, you know, they were part of a couple of good seasons, including last year. But you got to make a decision. You know, you go in the big, whatever it is, 5 for 25, 5 for 27.5. If you're doing that, great. Go ahead and sign your guys, like the Panthers did with Barkov and Bukestad and Trocheck and Smith and Ekblad. But if you're not going to do that, you know, you can't let guys walk for nothing anymore. You know, it's almost like you got to take a little bit of the emotion out of it. And instead of saying, hey, oh, how could you ever get rid of this guy? He was here for so long. You know, you've got to get the proper assets for him. So instead of letting those guys leave for nothing down the road, you got McCann, you got Pesek, you got a second-round pick, a third-round pick, and a fourth-round pick. So it's been a tremendous remake. I'm real excited for Keith Yandle, honestly. The Panthers really have never had a guy like him. And Matheson, between the playoffs and the world championships, but he was very good in the AHL last year. Then you throw in Demers and Pesek and Petrovic. The Panthers really have a chance, I think. I think they're legitimate Stanley Cup contenders if they stay healthy.
Goldie, were you surprised that Keith Yandle received a 7-year contract from the Panthers?
I'm really not, because, you know, we have the conversations, don't we? Every year, mm-hmm. July 1st till about July 10th or 12th, then we all kind of forget about it. Unrestricted free agency. That's why a lot of these guys want to get there. They usually get a little more years than you think they would get and a little more money than you think they would get. So, sure, you know, being ideal, a guy that's almost 30, would you rather probably give him 5 years and, you know, $30 million, you know, or something like that? Sure. But instead they went 7 for the $44 million. So, you know, he is an offensive defenseman. I've never been around him. I heard he's a great guy, cares about the game. You really got to see, you know, what kind of person he is, because we're seeing guys play later and later. I mean, I look at the Panthers, what Campbell did this year, what Luongo did this year in their late 30s, what Jágr does now in his mid-40s. So, you know, Yandle could be one of those guys, and at 35, 36, 37, could still be going strong.
Steve Goldstein's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Florida Panthers. Steve is the play-by-play broadcaster for the Panthers on Fox Sports Florida. Steve, one of the a litany of moves that we've talked about for the Panthers this offseason. I think one that raised a fair number of eyebrows, though, was the signing of James Reimer to that big contract, 5 years, $17 million, a $3.4 million salary cap hit. Sort of a two-part question here. His contract expires in 2021. Roberto Luongo expires in 2022. Is this Reimer contract, the length of it, a sign that, you know, the Panthers are assuming Luongo won't play out the entirety of that contract? And then second aspect, how does this tie into the upcoming expansion draft when you can only protect one goaltender?
Well, that is a very interesting question. I'm not sure if the Panthers have the answer to that yet. If they do, it's close to the vest. So I don't know how the expansion draft plays into it. The other thing I don't know yet, maybe you guys do, is there are teams going to be able to make trades with Vegas to say, okay, don't take this player and we'll give you whatever, a player or a draft pick? I don't know if that's going to be legal or not.
I believe not in this upcoming expansion draft, but okay. You know, with the NHL and the team's interesting ability, it seems to always work around the so-called rules. You never know what's going to happen.
Right. Well, you know, so if it's an expansion draft situation, you know, then you really got to look at it. Reimer has a great year. Maybe they do leave Luongo unprotected, and I don't know who else they leave unprotected, maybe figuring they won't take, you know, Roberto Luongo at the time at age 38. I think what the Panthers are trying to do is, first, and then we found out Luongo had a little hip procedure,
sure.
Should be ready for opening night, but, you know, there's a little question mark there, I guess, and you know, he's going to be 38 years old, and he had a great year last year. What they want to do is they want to get him down in order, I think they want to keep him long-term, in order to preserve him, you know, let him play 50-55 games a year instead of 60-65. In order to do that, you need a quality backup goaltender. I think eventually they like Reimer enough where they think he could take over as the number one goaltender. If that's the case, then, boy, you got him in a bargain at about $3 million a year moving forward. And I also think the third part of that is, the Panthers are trying to win the Cup this year. Like, they've been building for a while. They're trying to win now, and if you win now, you need at least two, maybe even three. They even made the trade for Red Oberra, so they actually have a third goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
We saw in the playoffs, 16 teams made the playoffs this year. 28 goaltenders were used in the postseason. So I think it's a lot of different factors for the reason they went out and they got Reimer, but clearly they like him a lot, and they think down the road – you know, he could either be the number one goalie or an even splitter.
Steve, you still there? Or you're breaking up on us.
Oh, sorry about that.
There you go. Okay.
Me?
Yeah, we got you back now.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay.
Steve, you there?
Nope, we lost Steve there. Okay. We're having troubles. You know, these cell phones these nowadays. You can't get a good cell reception no matter how hard you try. We'll get Steve back on the line and continue the interview in a second.
Yeah, no, and we got to get Steve back on because we have a lot more to talk about. You know, the Panthers, you know, in addition to making a couple of trades here, Drew, you know, we haven't even got to Aaron Ekblad. We got to ask Goldie about Aaron Ekblad, Vincent Trocheck, and Riley Smith. And it's interesting what Steve just said, that the Panthers are trying to win the Stanley Cup now, and it makes sense with all of these signings that they're making here long-term.
Steve, are you back? Maybe. Steve, are you there?
Yeah, you got me?
Now we got you. Okay, perfect. There you go. A little bit of a hiccup, but all good, as you continue on.
Yeah, Steve, we just have, you know, a couple other players we want to ask you about here, and then we'll let you enjoy your Saturday afternoon. Aaron Ekblad signs the 8-year contract extension. He's got 1 year left on his contract, which means he's going to be a Florida Panther for at least 9 more years. I guess this is one of probably the most obvious contract extensions signed. Aaron Ekblad is one of the best young defensemen. How good do you think Aaron Ekblad can actually be? Are we talking about a guy that could potentially be a 4- or 5-time Norris Trophy winner?
I think he's going to be in the conversation. I think he's going to be one of those guys like a Doughty type that's been there every single year, you know, in the top three, top five as far as Norris Trophy contender. The guy's a tremendous player, and I can tell you at 20 years old, the maturity level is off the charts, and he's every bit as good off the ice as he is on the ice. And, you know, he's the whole package. Tremendously impressive guy all around, and I love what the team did with him. You know, we found out the other day that, you know, they didn't haggle with him on that contract. They try to come to a fair number, not lowball him, basically telling him, hey, we love you. Here's what do you think? He was right there in the ballpark. So you didn't go back and forth and have any kind of, you know, contentious situation with the guy. So, yeah, I think the sky is the limit for Aaron Ekblad, and his game is really just starting. He's been very good 2 years, 27 goals in the 2 years, very good defensively. Now I believe he takes on a bigger role into some penalty killing.
Steve, we'll let you go on a couple more questions here for you. First one I want to ask about, you know, the Panthers made the decision, obviously, to look at their core and lock it up long term. In your experience with the team, and you follow these guys night in, night out, is this a close-knit group? I mean, they've all sort of come up together from being drafted relatively high in their various rounds. Is this as close-knit of a group that they'd want to keep them all together and sort of have them develop even further together for the next 4, 5, 6 years as all these guys sign these significant long-term contracts?
I think that's a tremendous point that a lot of people have not brought up. And, you know, you do need to realize that, yes, you know, and there's a bunch of them that, you know, the Trocheks that were drafted by this team, and they've all been around together. They've been at the developmental camps and the training camps. And remember, you know, 3 years ago, and, you know, Ekblad wasn't there at the time, but some of the others were. The Panthers had 66 points. That's how they got Ekblad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they went from 66 to 103 in 2 years. So you've also got guys that were kind of here on the fringe of when things weren't going well. So I think that's a huge part of it. They identified not only the right players for this team, but the right kind of people for this team. You know, for years it's been interesting. The Panthers have always had to bring in, whoever was the captain of this team was always a guy from the outside. Well, a year or two from now, you're going to have your choice of a number of players, from Ekblad to Trocheck, on that could be the captain. I think that tells a lot about the kind of people these guys are. That's a big part. Identified the half dozen or so guys that they think the talent and have the desire to win Stanley Cups, and the Panthers have treated them extremely fairly by long term.
Steve, we'll let you go on this last question. It doesn't have anything to do with a current Florida Panthers player, but the Jets went out in the offseason and they acquired, or they signed Quinton Howden, who formerly was with the Panthers, played the last couple seasons there. Why didn't things work out between Quinton Howden and the Florida Panthers, and what were your overall impressions of his game in the, you know, you saw him for 58 games last year. What were your impressions of Quinton Howden as a member of the Panthers?
Yeah, got to know Quinton over the years. Obviously, he was drafted. 2010, what a tremendous guy. You know, and his brother drafted in the first round this year, Brett. I mean, you know, wonderful. His mom and dad. You know, there were injuries, I think, over the years that really set Howden back. You look at some of the seasons he had down at AHL, the scoring ability that he had in junior out in the dub just really never came to fruition. Great skater, great speed, but I just look at the Panthers and, you know, last year he was scratched late in the season, scratched in the playoffs, and I think really the bottom line is they wanted to upgrade that third and fourth line, you know, around Nick Bjugstad and around Derek McKenzie, the two centers, and with guys like McCann and Sevier and Mark Chiseau and some of the other players the Panthers have coming up, you know, Lawson Craft and some of these other guys, you know, Jace Hauerluck is now going to be probably in the AHL this year. I just think they is an upgrade. And, you know, a qualifying offer, obviously, is still $1 million. And the Panthers did a great job with the salary cap management. So it was a guy they just felt that, you know, they had better players coming through the system. So I wish him the best of luck. I hope he does well up there in Winnipeg.
Steve, who's this Richard Pollock guy that the Florida Panthers signed? Because we hear he's a bit of a sketchy character.
You know, very sketchy, but when you put him up next to Warrior, he should be president of the United States. So that's what I say about him, you know?
Lots of ties between the Winnipeg and the Panthers organization, of course. Steve, really appreciate your time. Play-by-play voice of the Florida Panthers, Steve Goldstein. He joins us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Save me a table at Earl's when the Panthers come up there this year.
We will.
We'll do that, Steve.
First beer's on me.
Yeah, we'll see you soon. Take care,
Perfect.
Steve.
Okay.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to today's guest, Steve Goldstein, Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster. And Arpin Basu, he covers the Montreal Canadiens for NHL.com and LNH.com if you prefer to read your hockey news in French. One segment here, Ezzy, the arbitration cases. 24 NHL players have elected to go to arbitration with their various teams. Generally speaking, we see this happen every year. Of those 24, how many do you expect to actually get into arbitration? Usually the number is a lot fewer. We've already seen Kyle Palmieri, who's elected to go to arbitration. He reached an agreement with the New Jersey Devils. He gets, I believe, 6 years, if I'm not mistaken. Pardon me, 5 years and $23.25 million. So he gets $4.65 million per season rather than going to arbitration with the New Jersey Devils, coming off a 30-goal season for the former first-round pick of the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, that was a nice acquisition for the Devils, and he turned a really good season into a nice five-year contract. That's probably, you know, that's going to be the best contract he's going to get of his career. He's in his prime right now.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy, Devontae Smith-Pelly, was another guy, former Duck, that made the most of his opportunity with the Devils. I really like what they're doing there in New Jersey. They brought in Ben Lovejoy. They traded for Taylor Hall, obviously, but... back to your question, Drew, about the arbitration. How many was it last year that actually went to arbitration? Five?
Yeah, if that. I mean, the big one was Mike Hoffman last year.
Right. He
was
he's up for arbitration again.
Again, he was the big loser last year. Mike Hoffman, you know, only was awarded a $2 million deal last year in arbitration with the Ottawa Senators, and I think he clearly outperformed that. I mean, you know, he had 59 points last year. The fact that Mike Hoffman made $2 million and is coming off years of 27 goals and then 29 goals, you'd expect Hoffman is going to cash in if he does end up going to arbitration, if he can't come to a contract agreement with the Ottawa Senators. Tyson Barry of the Colorado Avalanche, another guy who is elected to go to arbitration. A lot of talk there about what's going to happen with that agreement. Is he on the trade block? A lot of rumors and fire or smoke, at least, around Tyson Barry and the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, and that's because Tyson, you just mentioned it. I mean, Tyson Barry is a guy that the Colorado Avalanche have obviously decided they don't want to sign to a long-term contract. That's why he's the subject of trade rumors. I think it's ridiculous because Colorado right now is not very deep on defense.
No.
But Tyson Barry is maybe just not the right guy that they want to build that defense around, Drew. But, you know, you look at some of the other names. We talked about Danny DeKeyser on the Detroit Red Wings. Kelly Yarncroc, who had a pretty good season for the Nashville Predators there. Two significant ones for me, and I don't expect these to go to arbitration, but Kevin Hayes and Chris Kreider, New York
Rangers. Both of the Rangers.
Winnipegger Dylan McIlrath also filed for arbitration, but Hayes and Kreider are both top six forwards for the New York Rangers, and this is a Rangers team that has taken a step back, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
certainly since they went to the Stanley Cup Finals versus the LA Kings. So Hayes and Kreider are two ones that I'm going to be watching. You mentioned Mike Hoffman. Another one to look out for, Braden Schenn with the Philadelphia Flyers. He was a guy who had a really good year for the Flyers last year. And Alex Killorn, Tampa Bay Lightning, that's another guy.
There's some significant names that... You know,
we talked about Jaden Schwartz and Marcus Johansson.
Yeah, St. Louis and Washington, respectively. There's some significant names that have filed for arbitration,
yes.
But it's so rare that these guys actually go with an arbitration hearing. The biggest one, really, of recent memory is the PK Subban.
Yep.
Remember, before he was traded from Montreal to Nashville, he actually went to arbitration. They had the hearing, and before the arbitrator could come out with a decision is when the Habs signed him to the 8-year contract worth however many millions of dollars that was, $7 million and change back in the day.
I would expect, Drew, probably around 3 to 6 of these actually go to arbitration, just ballparking. I'm not sure. But when you're talking about, we mentioned Kevin Hayes, Chris Kreider on the Rangers. We talked about Mike Hoffman, Braden Schenn, Alex Killorn, Jaden Schwartz. I don't expect any of those to go to arbitration. We've talked about it before. Going to arbitration is not a fun process. That's when you basically each side is nickel and diming each other, trying to get a lower or higher price, right? So I wouldn't expect most of these to go to arbitration, but you never know if one side is not willing to budge. Like when you're talking about Braden Schenn, for example, or you're talking about a Chris Kreider, I would expect those guys to get signed to 4 or 5 year contracts.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, I don't think you're wrong based on, you know, quality players don't often go through the entire arbitration process. It's just a means to an end to getting a guy under contract.
We'll see, Drew, next week when we're on the air next Saturday, because a lot of these arbitration dates are in end of July.
July 20th through August 4th is the arbitration period. So
I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, 3 to 6 of these guys, maybe even more, have signed, you know, before next week's show.
That's generally what happens. It's all deadline hunting, as we've talked about on this show for the last number of years. And as that deadline approaches, contracts tend to get signed. That's it for this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to Arpan Basu and Steve Goldstein for joining us. You can follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. For producer Rory doing a great job behind the board getting us on and off the air. For my colleague Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball 60 minutes from now here on TSN 1290.